Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
AFA Action takes attacks on the family seriously. The enemies of the family constantly employ new tactics to try to sneak past our radar. They know if we stand together, their evil plans will fail. Your gift to AFA Action allows us to stay vigilant against their onslaught. And if you give this month, you'll receive access to the Cultural Institute video, When Your Faith is Illegal, by Frank Harbor on AFA Stream as our thanks. You can make your gift today at afaaction.net.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, November 19th, and in case you weren't aware, based on how some Republicans are acting, it is only 2025. It's not yet the midterms, and it's definitely not yet the presidential election in 2028. But you'd think that this was November of, maybe 2027, based on all of the chatter around a post-Trump MAGA conservative GOP and who is running for president. Apparently Ted Cruz is already pushing himself out there. There are rumors about who's going to be the next conservative leader. I think this is an important conversation to have, but we need to kind of pump the brakes a little bit and focus on what Congress should be doing and also what the state should be doing. And of course, I'm talking about mainly Florida and Governor Ron DeSantis's administration, because last I checked, conservatives were still against things like exorbitant taxes and the wasting of government funds. And yet, and this is just my opinion looking at all of the chatter, and yet there are a lot of prominent conservatives who have been very anti-DeSantis just because they're anti-DeSantis and they somehow think that he's not aligned with President Trump, which is absolutely, utterly preposterous. But they think that they need to be anti-DeSantis just because they're so concerned about him winning in any way, shape, or form, because they don't want to lose their influence, their power, and their access to MAGA. And so now you have a lot of, prominent, and when I say prominent, let's put that in air quotes, because really they're just like these ex-influencers and, maybe some of the podcasters. And I'm all for, influencing and podcasting, like that's fine. I have a podcast too, Beyond This Radio Show. But the point is, if you're using your platform to not actually put forward conservative policy and conservative values, then what are you doing? Because a lot of these people are against Governor DeSantis and Lieutenant Governor Collins, the DeSantis Collins administration's move to rid Florida of these exorbitant property taxes so that we can actually own our own property. They're against that somehow, and they're making up all of these crazy fictitious arguments just to be contrarians and just to oppose. And that's the same thing with the Florida legislature, that while they say they're Republicans, they have every step of the way tried to oppose Governor DeSantis just to oppose him. They have no arguments. They're just being contrarian. And so the latest thing is that somehow the Republican legislature is suggesting that only that property taxes being removed or reduced would only benefit elderly people. And so they're against it somehow for that reason. They're somehow against it for all kinds of other reasons. But again, last I checked, conservatives should be supporting this measure. So let's welcome in Florida's great Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins. And am I wrong here? I thought this was a really easy conservative win here that, we should all want to actually own our property outright.
Yeah, Jenna, it is a little concerning. It's a little frustrating, and it has been for quite some time. Ultimately, Governor DeSantis has said repeatedly, and I have heard everywhere I've gone around the state, I have been in pretty much every county over the last 90 days or so. And everywhere I go, people want the same thing. They want freedom from their property tax on homesteaded properties. They want to own their home outright. And, you know, as a state, that's the only lever we can really pull that's going to put money directly back in the pockets of our constituents. Because, you know, as often is not mentioned here, the state doesn't get any property tax money. That goes to the municipalities. When you look at how this has happened, our property values have gone up over and over and over. You're paying more just because of that. Now, we know that governments have an addiction to spending, but what we don't talk about enough is that addiction to increasing spending. Those millage rates now raise that up vertically as well, and you're just paying more and more at an exponential level over time, and it's frustrating. Homesteaded properties are not the mainstream of property tax income. We know that. We're working the numbers. Governor DeSantis will have his plan when he's ready, when it's released. And, you know, we need to stand by and wait and reach for the top rung on that ladder, because that's exactly what the people of Florida want to see. It's that bold, conservative approach. It's simple.
Yeah, and we also don't want to see waste, because you're absolutely right that the state doesn't get any benefit from the property taxes. It's all the districts and municipalities. And Florida DOGE just yesterday, and I'd encourage everybody, even if you're not in Florida, follow this, because you should be encouraging your states to do the same thing that Florida is doing on the state level, as we saw the federal DOGE, which ultimately wasn't codified by Congress, at least yet. I mean, we have three more years. We'll see. But Florida is doing a phenomenal job of pointing out all of the waste. And so just yesterday, Florida DOGE posted the city of Orlando has spent $460,000 since 2020 to count trees as part of quote unquote tree inventory. And then people are sitting here asking, well, how will we pay for roads if we reduce property taxes? And I'm thinking, because of this, like, do we really need to count trees? Do we really need to do like all of this waste that the state and local governments are pushing out? And this is the same everywhere. I mean, I know that Texas has been trying to eliminate or reduce property taxes. My good friend Don Huffines is running for comptroller there to hopefully help that. I mean, so this isn't just a Florida problem. This should be conservatives supporting this wholesale and in every state. And so why do you think, Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, that some conservatives are actually voicing opposition to this? I mean, I think part of it also is the Florida governor race.
Yeah, you know, Jenna, I think that's exactly it. It's unfortunate we're putting politics before people in terms of what certain members of the House, certain leadership, people in leadership across the House are doing. And it's very frustrating. This happened last year. We've seen it happen again this year a little bit. And, you know, I hope and I pray that we can come online and do what Florida does best. And that's drop strong conservative legislation, have a bold approach to what we're going to do, and lead. When Florida leads on these issues, not only do we win, other states mimic us. And because of that, America wins. And you start seeing a revolution focused on constitutional leadership. And that's not, don't play with the words, people. We're not talking about that. Nobody wants peace more than someone who's truly been to war. But the fact is, we have to fight within our chambers for the things that matter, for our people, for the things that really brought us where we are. Governor DeSantis has stood alone, really, since COVID in many ways. And through time, our legislature has continued to work together to really paint this bold conservative approach. This last year or so has been a little rough. It's been difficult. It's been difficult to get things passed. And I hope and pray that we can get past that this session, because I've got friends there. I have hopes. And I have desires to see things go better. But in the end, it's going to come down to choice. We're either going to have to work together to give our constituents what they want, which is bold, conservative leadership focused on property tax relief, or not. And in the end, you know, it does come down to 26. We know Byron Donalds has been in the race really since March. He hasn't been able to really get the vast majority of people behind him. You have a couple of other people who are in the race right now. And in the end, they want to see who's going to be in charge of the state, what it's going to be like. Are we going to continue on a path of conservative leadership, or are we going to fall down and drift back into soft, less conservative approaches? I'll tell you what, for me, you got to keep hitting the gas pedal. It's all gas, no brakes. you got to follow in the path of Governor Ron DeSantis. You got to stand up and fight for our conservatives, no matter the cost, no matter how hard. That's our responsibility.
Yeah, and you know, I see some who are in this race, I mean, primarily Byron Donalds, as, you know, taking a cue more from the federal government and the Trump administration on issues like H-1B, where he's kind of flip-flopped all over the place, on, you know, other issues, and being very vague about it and really waiting for the admin to give him the talking points to run on, instead of being like a Governor DeSantis who will lead on issues and then actually turn Donald Trump's mind, like he did, for example, on Amendment 4 here in Florida, where initially Trump opposed it. And then Governor DeSantis, through constant pressure behind the scenes and also out in front, led on that, and ultimately Trump opposed it, where Byron Donalds ran on pro-life, and, you know, he's sitting there waiting for Trump to allow him to oppose it. I mean, that to me is just not even leadership at all. It's not even weak leadership. It's not leadership at all.
Yeah, Jenna, that's putting personal safety above people. Again, that's just politics. It's frustrating. Look, I have been all over the state, and people don't want more of the old politics as normal. They don't. They want someone who's willing to step forward, step in the breach, and stand on the right issues. You got to have a vision. You know, we've seen these flip-flops on H-1B. We've seen flip-flops on multiple issues with Byron. And in the end, it's incredibly frustrating. That's not the kind of leadership that anybody wants right here in Florida. It certainly isn't. And ultimately, either get strong on the issues and stand, even if alone, or you know what? Other people could jump in. Other things are going to happen. And Floridians, let me make this clear. Everything in Florida is earned. It's not given. Nobody gets a layup. Nobody gets a free pass. You got to earn the right to lead in Florida. That's how this works. It's very simple.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think the big question that everybody is wanting me to ask you is, you know, when or if are you jumping into the race? Because I see a lot of momentum and people who want to support you for governor, and they want an alternative to Byron Donalds. And so are we going to see a campaign launch anytime soon?
Well, Jenna, we've gone through our entire process. I've been very deliberative on this, and I've tried to make this clear, and I have maintained the same stance and approach to how I lay this out. I didn't want to make it about my ego. I don't want to make it about me. I wanted to make this about we and leadership overall. I've gone through all of those checks and balances. I am so grateful for the feedback I've received from across the state. It's been incredibly positive. And we have made our decision. We know what we're going to do. And now at this point, we're just kind of figuring out how we're going to say what we got to say and how this is going to work. And then I would say stay tuned. We are we're knocking on the door of being able to exactly explain to people what's going on, what's going to happen, and what our vision is going to be, and frankly, where we think our role could be in the future. So stand by to stand by, and we'll be out there soon.
All right. Well, looking forward to that. And before I let you go, Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, I'm always really appreciate your time. I also did want to get your take on the congressional redistricting issue and how that will likely impact Florida.
Yeah. So look, you know, I don't know whether you're going to get 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, who knows how many seats you get. But if the math doesn't math, and I say this as a guy with 10 fingers and 5 toes, Jenna, math always wins. If it doesn't proportionally align with how our population distribution is built down, well, then we absolutely have a responsibility to look into that. I fully support us digging through this, getting under the hood, and making sure that math works. And if we see that it doesn't, well, then we should do redistricting. It's that simple. We should have maps that absolutely align ourselves with how our state is distributed from a population density standpoint. And if we're not, then we're not following through and supporting our people. Again, take the hard right, do what's necessary to fight, win, and protect our way of life and what we do here in Florida.
Yeah, well said. Florida has to continue leading from the front. And I think that's what Floridians, including myself, who I moved here because of DeSantis's leadership,
yes, ma'am.
And your leadership in the DeSantis administration has been phenomenal. And we want to see a future for Florida that builds upon that legacy and doesn't go backward. And I'll just say for the people listening as well. So I've had Lieutenant Governor Collins on, you know, frequently, of course, in that capacity. Everybody's waiting, I think, for him to jump into the race. But I've also had James Fish back on. I'm going to have Paul Renner on this program. They're all announced. And Byron Donalds is the only one who has not yet been willing to come come on and answer some of those questions that I would like to know as a Floridian, like why he was very, not even squidgy, but why he was so hesitant to get out there and lead from the front on especially Amendment 4, because that issue is at the heart of conservatism. If you are not standing up for pro-life, I mean, that's like the easiest issue for conservatives, then that really concerns me for the future of Florida. So for Byron Donalds, we're still inviting you on. I'd love to hear from you. And I'd love to hear from your team, because I would love to ask you some of these questions and give you an opportunity to respond. The future of Florida, it's really important, not just to the state and for those of us who live here, but it's really important for the future of the country, because Florida has been leading under Governor DeSantis, and we've got to continue. We'll be right back with more. We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the growing life inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she will choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing the truth. Friend, this is not the time to be silent. It is the time for courage, for truth, and for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby, to help her choose truth and choose life. Please donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby, or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, the Daily Wire had a very, very interesting piece and concerning piece, I think, that all of us need to pay attention to. The headline is "The Fight to Make a Christian College Christian Again." Charlie Kirk warned that Biola University was slipping as a Christian college. And this is what the author Megan Basham had to say on her ex, Breaking. And this is back on November 11th, so just last week. The head of the counseling department at Biola University, one of the largest evangelical colleges in the country, has declared herself an LGBTQ ally and filed an amicus brief in favor of Colorado's so-called conversion therapy ban, which prevents Christian counselors from using biblical teaching to help clients end unwanted LGBTQ behavior and identities. So Alliance Defending Freedom, of course, is suing to overturn that law on the grounds that it is a violation of First Amendment free speech and religious liberty rights. There was a reason that before his death, Charlie Kirk was warning at Turning Point USA events about what was happening at Biola. She goes on to say, "But the real story is that the drift and compromise Christian critics are highlighting at Biola is happening all across Christian higher ed landscape, often in even more extreme ways. We need to talk about how our Christian educational institutions are being infiltrated by people who are not Christian." So Meg Basham joins me now, and we do need to talk about this, because conservatives have for so long highlighted the problems with higher ed and the teachers unions and all of these LGBTQ allies that have infiltrated our education institutions. But we've always kind of had this little carve out of at least the Christian institutions that we thought and maybe just hoped were at least teaching the truth. But it seems like a wider swath of Christian ed are not actually Christian. And that's really sad.
Yeah, and I think what's important to know, Jenna, is that the people who are raising the concerns aren't people who want to see these institutions destroyed. It's not people who are trying to deconstruct their own faith or the faith of others. These are, you know, alums of these institutions, of these schools typically. And so that's why you hear them speaking out. So this really began with Elisa Childers and her podcast, and Krista Bontrager at the Center for Biblical Unity, starting to raise questions, I think in Krista's case, like a couple of years ago, when she was noticing the height of the DEI and the social justice and critical race theory being brought into the school. So that, I think, you know, those people started voicing concerns a while ago.
Yeah, and, you know, so for specifically Biola and the head of Biola's counseling department, is this somebody who is new, or is this kind of a relatively new phenomenon that people who are in these positions are coming in almost as infiltrators? Like, where do you see this beginning, and how long has this kind of been pervading?
Yes, yeah, so I believe the head of the Rosemead Counseling Center at Biola, Michelle Willingham, I think she's been there for quite a while, Jenna, and so have these other problems, these other issues that have been raised. So she signed the amicus brief. She announced herself as an LGBTQ ally, but there were other elements that other people had brought up that went along with that, including the fact that the school's statement on sexuality allowed for the possibility of allowing a transgender student to use opposite sex facilities. So there was a lot of things like that going on that hadn't been addressed, and the reaction of Biola's administration wasn't to say, okay, we're going to fix these situations. What we're going to do instead is wave it away and say nothing's happening here and send out our conservative professors to try to tell the concerned alum that there's no fire, it's just smoke. And instead, more has continued to come out since that point.
Wow. And I'm speaking with Megan Basham, who is a journalist, New York Times bestselling author, and of course, at The Daily Wire. And, you know, it's so sad that so many Christian institutions are bending the knee to these types of allyships and situations. And, you know, for a long time, and my cousin actually went to Biola years ago. And even at that time, you know, one of the concerns that she had, and that, you know, for those who know my mom, who is a biblical counselor compared to so-called Christian psychology, was this whole notion that these so-called Christian counseling departments are really basing their training and education in secular psychology that is totally antithetical to the biblical worldview. I mean, if you start with Freud, you're going to end up at a place different than starting with the Bible. And so do you think, right, Megan, that that's part of the issue, is that we're not starting with the Bible in some of these departments and then working our way up in terms of curriculum from there? I mean, even in my own field in law, you know, if you start with the proposition that we are in a secular humanist social construct and have a social compact, then you can easily get off from first principles and this notion that our rights come from God. And you see that, unfortunately, even in some Christian colleges.
Yeah, Jenna, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that's exactly what some of the professors that I spoke to on the condition of anonymity told me about Biola. They said their concern is that you had faculty coming in who were trained in a secular, worldly way of doing something like counseling. And so they're coming and saying, well, this is the right way to do it. And they're not asking, is this biblical? They're just asking, is this what the, you know, American Psychology Association would approve? So they're not starting with scripture. And I think the other part of that is how accreditation and that process has been used to force Christian schools to adopt secular policies and positions and teaching that they normally wouldn't if they didn't have this threat of accreditation hanging over their head. So I do think the administration needs to do something about that. But, you know, this is something that's emblematic. What's happening at Biola isn't unique. And I think that's the important thing to know, is that so many people all across the Christian higher ed landscape do call me and say, these are issues at my school too. And I think that's why people like Charlie Kirk have been raising the alarm there.
Yeah, and that's such a great point, that Charlie was raising the alarm about Christian higher ed in particular, but then also more broadly, the concerns about higher ed overall and how we are training our young people. And so it's probably no surprise that we're now seeing this so-called new right going against a lot of conservative principles that are predicated on and grounded in a biblical worldview, because they're not being trained first and foremost at home. They're not being trained by their churches. And so then when they go off into college, even if they think they're getting a so-called Christian education, the Christianity is almost like an add-on, like, you know, the frosting on the cake. It's not the substance of the worldview. And so is it any wonder then, Meg, that we have this pervasive problem of conservative principles being the foundation of our young people? I mean, this is, I think, one of the big clarion calls that Charlie was pushing for in the last just couple of years.
Yeah, and that was actually a point that he made, was that the concern is if you don't have that strong grounding in biblical conservative teaching, then anything can come along sort of doctrinally and move you. And that can happen on the Nick Fuentes, Groyper, anti-Semitic right that we've seen. And I think it's been alarming to a lot of people. Or it can happen on the deconstructing progressive rainbow flag waving left. And so those are the positions that you have to avoid. And you absolutely do that by standing rock solid in Scripture.
Absolutely. And so for these teachers that are coming in to Christian institutions, do you think in your conversations with these professors and with these administrations, is the problem that they're not being vetted enough, or is the problem that there aren't Christians who are applying to these positions, or maybe there are Christians that don't meet the secular accreditation requirements, or, you know, maybe a blend of all of that?
Probably a blend. I think there's obviously a vetting issue, but maybe the bigger issue is that once these things start to grow and you start to have this kind of compromise, what I'm hearing from other concerned professors and alumni is that administrations tend to be passive and they don't want to deal with it. So one of the things that the Center for Biblical Unity turned up this week was that they had an art faculty member at Biola who has been teaching divination and selling divination kits. Apparently for years she's been doing this, and people are just sort of inclined to turn a blind eye because nobody really wants the hassle. But I think we have to remember that there is a reason that we are told to contend for the faith, because we are warned in Jude that infiltrators are going to try to come into the church, so we can't really ignore it. It's going to be an ongoing process.
That is shocking to me that would be going on, yeah, and that the administration would turn a blind eye. And then, so here's a Christian university where you have something so obviously antithetical to Christian values and for what these Christian institutions purportedly stand for. Meanwhile, you have the secular institutions that are supposed to not actually stand in terms of religion, you know, for anything, because they're all about separation of church and state and all of that nonsense, right? But they're not actually supposed to be teaching a specific either pro or anti-Christian message, at least according to them. And the moment that a Christian even just passively, like, wears a cross necklace or prays quietly in their corner or, you know, kneels after a football game, a coach, then all of a sudden, this is like the biggest trauma to society. It ends up at the Supreme Court. I mean, it seems like Christians are just willing to turn a blind eye to everything that is going on that we rightly should be standing up for. And the left is willing to take on and combat every single even small showing of Christianity in the culture. And I find that so frustrating. Where are the Christian warriors?
Yeah, I think a part of it is that evil just tends to be active. It's always on the move. And those of us who want to expel the evil, it's exhausting. And I think you do go through periods where maybe there was a laxness in the church. And then when you see something, I would say, in this case, the evil of transgenderism and this bizarre ideology that man could become a woman, I think that finally sort of shakes us out of our stupor. And so you're seeing that now. So I do think you're seeing a lot of voices rising up and feeling like, hey, actually, we have to take responsibility for these institutions within the church that we love. So we are starting to see that now. But yes, it's been a very late hour before it started. So I'm glad we're starting to see it now. But you're also seeing a little bit maybe some criticism and pushback about this contending, this new wave of contending that we're seeing. I don't know if you saw that Carl Truman article a couple of weeks ago in First Things about the gig Eva, that he's concerned about the outside critics. But to me, I think it is a very needed corrective.
Yeah, and that article, I saw it. I haven't read the whole thing, and I apparently need to. But you know, I'm seeing a lot of the whole, you know, Big Eva movement for the next generation, especially because of the fracturing and the concerns that we've had and we've seen about the broader evangelical movement. Seeing a lot of, while there's a lot of young people that are wanting to go back to church, and especially in the wake of Charlie Kirk's death, they are more interested in the things of God and Christ. And we saw that moment of revival that I hope persists. But it seems like a lot of them are going back to more traditional churches. And in my opinion, as a non-Catholic, unfortunately, a lot of Catholic churches, instead of choosing churches that are based in biblical theology that is actually correct, and they're choosing the tradition over the substance because they've seen and they've been, I think, disillusioned by, and probably their parents have been disillusioned by Big Eva. And so, you know, where do you think that overall the movement of the church at writ large in America is going to maybe reconsider gaining ground among young people to tell them this is about the substance, it's not just about tradition?
Yeah, and I think probably the biggest thing is that our evangelical churches, our Protestant churches, need to specifically address young men right now. They have been forgotten, they have been reviled, they have been dismissed, and so I think now you rightly have a generation of confused, often angry, sometimes bitter and cynical young men. And so we need to be figuring out how to capture that audience before something much more destructive captures that audience. So that's one. And I think it's a demographic that is, I would call it Christ curious right now. You have a lot of young men asking questions about what does the Bible say, about what do Christians believe. So I think, you know, there's a moment where the harvest is clearly very ripe, and we should specifically focus on that harvest. But, you know, the other thing I think, Jenna, is that if we don't contend with what happened during the seeker-sensitive era, I also think we're going to miss this moment. So that's, you know, that's the second part of that, is we have learned some hard lessons about what it means to craft our teaching around what's trendy right now, or what we think will draw people to Christ, and instead of just holding Christ up. And so I think if we do that, that you're not going to see some of these young people peeling off and going over to Eastern Orthodoxy or Catholicism. So I think we need to consider how to add a little more reverence to what we do when we go to church on Sunday.
I think that's a really, really important point, Meg Basham, because churches who want to be so relevant that they water down their message and they want to be so welcoming and open and draw people in, then ultimately end up not wanting to offend them with the truth. And so then you get this almost, I call them more motivational TED Talks than anything, because if all you're doing is telling people, well, this is the path to having a better life in certain ways, well, you might as well be listening to Dave Ramsey, you know, in terms of investments, or some of these other motivational speakers, because you're losing the heart of the centrality of the gospel, which is that you are a sinner and you must turn from your sin, repent, and accept the free gift of salvation and have a transformed life and therefore live differently. And I think for these young people, especially young men who are, I think, rightly angry at so much of what is going on, and the political nature of things is talking about this, but the spiritual side in the church needs to be addressing that anger and explaining that the biblical worldview has the only responses, even if we don't see a Congress that's motivated to do anything, even if we see, you know, so many other frustrations in our culture. We can't allow young men to turn to the people like the Andrew Tates and this toxic masculinity bravado sort of solution, or to the Nick Fuentes's, and or to any of these other people. They need to turn to Christ. And that's what Charlie was so great about is that he could reach young men and take a political question or take a question out of anger and craft in his response pointing to Christ. And Meg, I don't see any other young man doing that nearly as effectively, because we have people like you, like Ali Beth Stuckey, like others that are so prolific in their message. But you and I as women can't reach young men in the same way that Charlie could. Do you see anyone else who can possibly step in, or a number of them step in and fill that void?
You know, I think Charlie was such a once in a generation talent. It is hard to imagine who on the stage right now could play his role in the way that he played it. But I do see at least this, maybe some signs that young men are moving on from political podcasts and political conversations and listening more to apologetics and people like Wes Huff and Mike Winger. And I'm seeing interest in that area grow. And I think that's a positive sign that, that we can still capture these young men for Christ and not for, you know, Fuentes or Andrew Tate or any of the terrible examples. So anyway, I'm losing my voice a little bit. So I just think that you're exactly right that we need to move quickly, and we need to do it with doctrine. We don't need to do it with, you know, any sort of outside trappings. Let's keep the rock of scripture the thing that we're standing on here.
Amen to that. Well, and we're going to take a break here, and you can go and get some tea and hopefully feel better. And you sounded just great, Meg Basham. And I so appreciate your wisdom and your voice here and calling out these things. And we can go to break, Devin. Yeah, thanks. That are so important for Christians to consider, because this isn't just about, you know, one counseling department in Biola. It's not just about, you know, one church or pastor in the Southern Baptist Convention that's getting a little off or whatever. We have to see the bigger picture here, which is about keeping the main thing, which is teaching the truth of the gospel of Christ. And if we have that foundation, then we build our conservative worldview based on that in politics and policy. We build our counseling philosophy based on that worldview and original sin, the condition of man, and anthropology and doctrine. We build our church based on what the Bible teaches. It must be comprehensive. Otherwise, we're missing the plot. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as we're talking more broadly about this overall problem of, and I think rightful concern about the angry young men and the lack of trust in institutions and the problems that now we're seeing in things like Christian higher ed, like we're seeing in opposition to basic conservative policy, like here in Florida, just to oppose a great governor in America. I mean, we need to sift through all of these things and kind of take it, like I said before the break, to kind of a 30,000 foot perspective. And I did that actually on Friday with a piece that I put in American Family News. You can find it at afn.net. And the title is "The Future of Conservatism Now in Question is Not Behind Us." And I want you to go and read this article. I'll post it on my social media right after the show. And if Devin and Adam can actually put this in the show notes, that would be helpful for people who go back to listen to this program, because I want you to read this fully, because I've been thinking about this for a while, about why the young conservatives and the young right are basically turning away from the idea of conservatism and talking about it in more of an antiquated fashion. And it's frustrating in a sense, because they're right about some things, like the old establishment GOP. We need to enter into a new generation. Some of the failings and the lack of wins, like the frustration in our Congress right now. I'm right there with you. I've been ranting about that through the whole government shutdown. You know, so a lot of their issues are correct and the new right is right to be skeptical, but they need to aim their skepticism correctly. So I write in this piece, young conservatives have grown weary of being told to trust the system when the system has proven itself unworthy. And the political class that demanded blind loyalty, even as it failed to secure the border, protect children, preserve national identity, or defend basic freedoms, then it's no wonder younger voters say they don't see anything worth conserving. And this is where I think that the rise of Donald Trump was very timely, because a lot of this and a lot of that criticism is about the old conservatives that even back in the 1980s, Barry Goldwater was calling out conservatives and the conservative movement and Republicans in particular for not genuinely being conservative in their policy principles and saying, you know, why are we for raising taxes? Why are we for exorbitant spending? Why are we for more of the federal government intrusion instead of protecting federalism and states' powers? All of these things that's been brewing, I think, throughout the 20th century writ large. And so Trump was supposed to change all of that. And I think he has and has been very successful overall in at least saying, OK, wait a minute, the old establishment GOP is not the answer. But the answer then is not to wholesale disregard conservatism completely or the institutions that God has ordained. And I think that really is the key here. And the main big idea that I have in this article is that the future of conservatism isn't behind us, it's above us. And what I mean by that, and let me say it again, the future of conservatism isn't behind us, it's above us. Is that so often, and I'm speaking now more to the overall AFR audience and our family that is in the upper generations, right? A lot of the Gen Zers, they're the ones that are angry. And for a lot of us who are, and I'm an older millennial in terms of my age category and then above, a lot of us are conservatives because we have a value buy-in to conservatism based on principles. And so we are always saying, and we have been throughout the Trump era and throughout the coming of age era of the Gen Zers, we need to be conserving and let's look to, you know, our founders for these principles and, you know, Reaganism and all of those things that are great, but it's not resonating with the Gen Zers because they don't want to go backward. And that's what they tend to hear in a message that is so focused on, you know, Reagan and Lincoln with, you know, all of the Lincoln Day dinners, which is great, you know, great title. And I'm not suggesting we necessarily change those, but I'm just talking about the GOP overall is so often pointing back to almost the nostalgia and the romanticization of those eras, instead of recognizing that what made those times during Reagan, during the founding era, and a lot in between, and even Trump to a large extent, where he's been successful, has not been because of the leader themselves or just the moment of time in American history, but because of the clarity, conviction, and courage of first principles that transcend any time, place, or even country. America isn't great just because of our identity in America. America has been the best nation throughout the history of the world because we have recognized that our rights are pre-political and that the authority for a legitimate civil government as an institution that God ordained, not man-made, comes from the ordered liberty and authority of God himself. And this is where the future of conservatism must go if we are truly going to conserve this idea of a biblical, truthful, well-ordered society. It can't be look back to Reagan, look back to, you know, in a few years, we're going to be saying look back to the Trump era, you know, look back to the founders. No, it needs to be look up to God. Because if all we are trying to do is build new trust or revamp or overhaul these man-made institutions that the young people are saying are not worthy of their trust, then we're focusing on the man-made institutions instead of bringing it back to God-ordained authority. And young people are not inspired by nostalgia. They are inspired, again, by clarity, conviction, and courage. They want leaders who understand the moment we're in, not the moment we miss. And so the conservative movement has two choices. We keep marketing the past and hoping that the next generation eventually romanticizes something that they've never lived through, or we can boldly articulate the eternal principles that transcend political eras. The future of conservatism, and I write in this article, so you have this, and please go to afn.net and share this article as widely as possible. The future of conservatism now in question is not behind us. The future of conservatism will not be secured by reliving 1776 or 1980 or the Trump era. It will be secured by returning to the God-ordained institutions that existed long before America and will outlast every political cycle. So what we need is a revitalized church that preaches truth without fear, strong families capable of withstanding cultural collapse, and legitimate civil government that protects life, liberty, and property, not that manages speech, faith, or parental rights. We need to have a framework that is strong enough to rebuild a free society. And these are not old-fashioned ideas. These are not antiquated past principles. This is not hearkening back to some era. This is saying that the Word of God is alive, it is relevant, it is the only answer to the problems that we all see in society. And so conservatives must stop conserving the wrong things. We have to build our government and our families and our church on the eternal order. The left builds institutions intended to replace God's authority. Conservatives must stop trying to conserve those. Our mission is not to protect the status quo or some political party or some political leader. Our mission is to protect the eternal order and the institutions that God has ordained, the legitimate civil government, the church government, and the family government. We are fighting to preserve truth, and truth does not age. If conservatives can realign around the God-ordained institutions, and we can express very clearly what those institutions must do and how they must thrive within the context of a free society moving forward, then we will build a strong movement that is strong enough to protect genuine liberty and inspire a new generation. Because the truth of God is always the answer for the problems of our day. It was always the answer to the problems in eras past, and it will always be the answer to any problems now or for the future. And what we are failing to do is, as Christians and as conservatives writ large in society, is number one, failing to preserve the nuclear family. We have lost in our society the definition of marriage to the man-ordained institutions like the Supreme Court that is wildly out of its legitimate authority. We have lost the definition of parentage. We've lost the definition of the rights of the child, even what it means to be human. To have gender that is part of an immutable characteristic. We are losing what the family is. And to suggest that any two or three or five people can come together and can choose to be a family, then necessarily is crumbling the very fulcrum of what makes a legitimate God-ordained society great. Because the family unit, one man, one woman in the covenant of marriage for life, is the best and most prosperous situation to raise children in the fear and admonition of the Lord, to be productive, to be healthy, to be loving, to understand and be good citizens, to have the best opportunity. All of those things are God's design for the family. We've lost that. We need to preserve that. We also need to preserve the church And we need to encourage that the God-ordained institution of the church is not a suggestion. It is not up for Christians to say, well, I'm a Christian, but I don't really go to church. I see that so often, that people call themselves Christians, but when you ask what church do you go to, oh, well, I don't really need that. It doesn't speak to me. And they think that it's something for themselves. Church is all about being part of the broader mission of the church. My church in Florida always talks about going and being the church. Yes, we gather together for correct doctrine, for reproof, for instruction in righteousness, all of those things, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished into all good works. What are those good works? Going out and being the church in society. And then when you have the family and the church, then you can build upon a legitimate civil government that can address these political problems. So the future of conservatism, not behind us, it's above us, transcending in truth and God's moral order. Go to AFN.net, and as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.